I know it's training camp and everybody comes out here and we're going to win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Give me realistic expectations on where you think this team can go from where you were last year.
That is a realistic expectation for us. Right. I believe, you know, it can be done. But we know it's an everyday process. You know, it's not how you start. You know, the season's about how you finish. But we have to, you know, get on a good run. I believe we have the playmakers from offense, especially defensively. You know, with that front four that we have, the back end is very good in the linebacking core. So I think we have a complete team. But it's gonna take, you know, all, you know, 53 of us, you know, each and every week to, you know, be consistent, no excuses, and continue to, you know, harp to each other what Coach Silas preaches to us. But you know, it's something that can happen.
Well, I can say with your leadership, talking to some of the other guys, obviously your talent level, there's a lot of excitement about being able to do something like that and having a quick turnaround. So best of luck this year.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and I am going solo today, live on this Friday morning. Justin Mello is on vacation for the next 6 days of shows, so I will be doing some solo shows here. We're calling it the Graveyard Shift, and shout out to Nathan, Audible Army member who came up with that name, and I have a ton of stuff to share with you guys today. We are going to play. This episode is going to be a little bit of a catch-up, a little bit of a reset, and I'm going to explain why I think the Titans are poised to take a major step and be the surprise team this year. Cam Ward, talking with NFL Network at practice on Thursday, said that Super Bowl is a realistic expectation for this Titans team. Is that true? I don't know if we can go that far, but I do think this Titans team is way ahead of schedule.
The excitement, the energy when you walk into this building, you feel it. You hear guys in the, on the offensive side, Kevin reeling them, Jeff, I'm telling you, we're going to be good. We're going to score some points this year. And that's the excitement that we get. We say that at practice, guys like Cardinale, guys, young guys, Elliot, like, man, I'm excited for these guys. I'm excited to see them walk into the building with so much energy and passion, knowing that, hey, man, this could be the year. And my message to them guys, bro, day by day, and we keep attacking them little things, like coming into the building with a great attitude, like attacking the practice like it's a game, we're going to be just fine.
The Titans have had numerous media appearances. NFL Network was at Titans training camp yesterday. They interviewed Robert Saleh, Jeffrey Simmons, Cam Ward, and Carnell Tate. Cam Ward and Robert Saleh were on Sirius XM on August 4th. That was a few days ago, the day that Cam hit Carnell Tate for the 65-yard touchdown in practice. And they spoke with Taylor Zarzor for the Sirius XM NFL radio training camp tour thing, which I don't know if you know this. Sirius XM is a paid subscription. So in order to listen to these interviews, I sign up for a Sirius XM subscription. That's how much I care about you guys. And I've got some clips to play. I have a ton of clips. This will be the most clip-heavy show in the history of the Music City Audible. But bear with me, because it's all going to lead to a thesis that the Titans are ahead of schedule and ready to compete. You heard Jeffrey Simmons just now talking about the energy in the building and how it feels different right now with the, and you know, these guys are all careful not to throw shade at their previous coaching staffs. But every time they talk about the new coaching staff, it's colored with shade at Brian Callahan's staff, because the difference is they can really feel the difference. So I want to play some clips here. I'm going to start after that Simmons one here with Cam Ward talking about why he thinks this team and especially the young players are ready to take a big step this season.
I think we're going to take a big step. We got a lot of good experience from the rookies from last year. Especially offensively and defense. I think the biggest one who's going to be an immediate impact player is going to be Kevin Winston on defense, the safety. The way he can close gaps, the way he can, you know, not only read the quarterback's eyes, but, you know, have a good feel to when he needs to break off on pass and stuff. But I'm excited for his young guys and continue to try to, you know, build things up and win some more games.
So these young guys are ready to take a step and win some more games. I apologize if my audio is slightly out of sync with my mouth. That's sort of a StreamYard live issue. I think it's been not an uncommon issue that we've experienced, but that's just a start of it, right? Because one of the reasons that I think this team is poised to be ahead of schedule and take a big step this year, we've talked about it a little bit this offseason, but I still don't think it's been emphasized enough that Robert Saleh and Mike Borgonzi and Gus Bradley and Brian Daboll going and getting the players that know their system, how much that can accelerate the growth for a young team with a young core learning a new system under a new head coach. Like, one of the hardest things about a new head coach taking over, A, installing his system, but B, you always hear talk about new regimes wanting to get guys in that fit their system. And they're usually talking about multiple acquisition cycles, multiple rounds of drafting and adding players in free agency until they have what they feel are the right guys for their system and their team. But this Titans team did something a little different this offseason that you don't often see. And they went out and they brought in a multitude of players who are familiar with this coaching staff and with the schemes that they want to run on both sides of the ball. Here's Robert Saleh talking about the players that they wanted to add this offseason and why he thinks it'll help accelerate their learning curve.
Yeah, just from the defensive side, you know, you're going from 3-4 to 4-3 attack, from read front to attack front. So bringing in guys on the D-line that understood our system, knows how to play it, and obviously the body types, solidifying the back end with Flott and Alante and and then on offense, you know, we focused on getting some guys in here that were familiar with Dave's system mm-hmm. as he installs that, because we feel really good about DK. We feel good about Ridley and Alec and obviously the backs. And it was just adding some compliments to that offense that to help it kind of scoot along with regards to install. But otherwise, you know, you're always competing. You know, you're always trying to get better in every spot. And I think Borgo and his staff did an awesome job identifying talent and bringing him in here.
Borgo did an awesome job identifying talent, but as they're going through the install phases here, you cannot overstate how helpful it is to have guys who have done it before for these coaches, especially when you talk about, as Saleh mentioned, going from a 3-4 defensive front to a 4-3, not just the change in the alignment there, but the change from a read and react style defense to an attacking front, a read front versus an attack front. That attack front is a huge shift for the D linemen that are already on the team. But having John Franklin Myers and Solomon Thomas and Jordan Elliott and all the and Jacob Martin and all the guys that have played for Saleh and Whitecotton and Gus Bradley, knowing how to play in that attack style front, obviously it helps like the defense compete on a quicker, like not have to adjust as much, but it also helps them teaching guys like Jeffrey Simmons, I'm not gonna play this clip, but said that that Saleh and Whitecotton, I think Whitecotton threw up a rep from early OTAs of Jeffrey Simmons trying to like anchor against a double team and saying, we are not doing this. If you are getting doubled, you're playing the wrong way in our defensive front. And Jeffrey Simmons saying he was frustrated at first, but now he's really excited about it. Having other guys in the system that can help teach Simmons and Keltrick Falk and Femi Oladejo and everybody else how to play in this attack style front, it just accelerates the learning curve and, again, puts them ahead of schedule. On the other side of the ball, you mentioned, Saleh mentioned Dable bringing in a bunch of guys that have played for him before, Austin Schlotman, Daniel Bellinger, Wandale Robinson. These guys are helpful to the young players, and Carnell Tate spoke about how the young receivers have really helped him start to learn this offense better.
Yeah, I've learned those two guys in the room, especially Wandale Robinson, who's been with Coach Dave, yep. So he knows the entire playbook in and out. Like, we get mad at him because like he don't necessarily have to. He don't even have to take notes no more. Yeah. So, and then also Calvin Ridley, who's familiar with the Dave's offense, and then he's just been helping me continue to improve my game.
I love it. And Saleh also said something on his SiriusXM appearance that I think really resonates with me personally. And it's kind of dumb, but it's also kind of very true. It's almost too obvious to feel insightful, but it is insightful if you track with me. I didn't cut this one, but he said, people win championships. You know, the people in the building, the coaching staff, the front office staff, and especially the players are the ones who go out there and win championships. And as a player, you have to want it. You have to want to put in that effort. You have to want to do the hard work and attack every single day the right way in order to be a good team. And I think the Titans really do have the right people in the building, the right young core of players, the right mix of veteran leaders, and just the leadership that permeates this team. It was mentioned by Ian Rappaport, who was out at Titans practice, posting a selfie video from practice calling the Titans the potential surprise team of 2026, a team on the rise, he called them. And it's because of the people. And I have a lot of clips I'm going to play about the people, but I think it's time we take our first break here. So, audio audience, we'll be right back. You know that 6 p.m. moment where dinner's supposed to happen, but there's nothing in the fridge? That used to be every Tuesday of my life. But now, I keep the freezer stocked with Omaha steaks. Tender steaks, flavorful burgers, even seafood, chicken, sides, not just steak, all delivered right to my door. Arrives frozen and ready to go. Yes, frozen delivery can be that good with Omaha Steaks, because it's steakhouse quality without steakhouse prices. I grilled the ribeye burgers last weekend. They were beefy, juicy, and actually these burgers tasted like a steak, because it is steak, ground from real cuts. If you've never tried Omaha Steaks, start with the Burger Perfection Flight. Comes with 20 premium steak burgers from 5 distinct cuts, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, you can get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF. BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. It's football season, Justin, the best time of year to make sports bets as far as I'm concerned. And whether you've been betting your whole life or just trying to get into it this season, MyBookie is the best way to place your bets.
My favorite part about MyBookie, you don't need to be an expert. They have NFL lines every week, every game. Find your sweet spot, place your bets, and make betting fun again.
Yeah, Justin, and my favorite part about MyBookie, I can place my bets wherever I am, wherever I want to, before the game kicks off. Like, it doesn't matter where I am. MyBookie.com is available, and so I'll be playing there all season long.
And guess what? If you're new to MyBookie, the Music City Audible has you covered. The Bet Back bonus gives you protection on your first play. Sign up with our promo code MCA, opt into the Bet Back bonus, and take your first shot with a safety net.
Yeah, that's right, Justin. If your first wager loses, you get it right back. No questions asked. Make the most of football season. Make all the action as important as you possibly can. Get in now. Cash in on the season with MyBookie. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. But remember, Audible Army, always bet responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. MyBookie! Welcome back, audio audience. Got some more clips for you guys here to play about why I think the Titans have the right people in the building, on the roster, on the coaching staff to turn this thing around. I'm going to start by playing a clip about Carnell Tate, one of the newest players that the Titans have added, probably the most high-profile addition on the roster this offseason, number 4 overall pick. And this one, it's just a little thing that I wasn't sure that this happened. I love to hear that this happened. Tell me if you catch what I'm talking about with Carnell Tate talking to Kurt Warner and Daniel Jeremiah.
After I got drafted, I started the OTAs. Cam was here the entire time. So, yeah, obviously I was here. We just working out, throwing with each other as much as possible. And then over the summer as well, I made a few trips out there to Houston. And then also all the receivers went down to Miami. So it's been a work in progress and only getting better.
Going down to Houston multiple times to catch passes from Cam Ward. We know that a big group of them went to Miami, but it sounded like a small group, possibly just Carnell Tate. I don't know. I don't have any reporting on this, but he was down in Houston with Cam over the offseason multiple times. That's a sign that these are the right people in the building who want to put in the work in the offseason. But the most telling quote to me about why I believe this team is ahead of schedule comes from something Robert Saleh told Taylor Zarzor and Brad, who's the new color guy, former Titans tackle? Why am I having a random blank on his name here? Let me know in the comments, whatever. Robert Saleh speaking on Sirius XM about why I believe the Titans are ahead of schedule and why how he is seeing that they are literally ahead of schedule.
Coach Saleh, what do you know about your team now that you didn't know in the spring?
You know what? I'm still learning that. You know, like we had one day of pads. You know, you get an idea of what they are. Well, one thing I will say is I felt like they did a really nice job in the 40 days off. You know, during OTAs, I think you come in with a certain mindset, and I think the way we practice kind of shocked them a little bit. And you know, they all look. I'm going to guess that they all looked themselves in the mirror and they've showed up to camp in a tremendous shape. To the point where I feel like we've been able to nudge them a little bit more than we had planned. They've come in great shape, and you know, like I said, we had a plan going in place, and And you know, the plan is always, I always leave room. If you notice at the end of practice, we've got these move the ball periods. That's for me to decide whether or not we want to do a little bit more. And the players, when you look at the sideline, they're asking for more. They want more. And there's a discipline in making sure that we don't put too much of a load as we continue to progress to get them ready for a football game. But really excited about the spot we're in.
Obviously, Brad Hopkins is who I was talking about, thanks to the chat. I was going to say that, but for some reason, it just didn't feel like that was the right name as I was starting to say it. But obviously, it's Brad Hopkins and Taylor Zarzor. That was not a pause. Calm down. I didn't say it as a pause. I intentionally avoided saying things like, as it came out of my mouth, so that it wouldn't be a pause, but I still got hit with it in the comments. All right. Anyway, that quote. Robert Saleh, first of all, thrilled with the guys coming back after the 40 days off. He was asked, what is something you learned about this team? He's like, I'm still learning them. But one thing that I learned is that when I sent them off on their own, no supervision, no daily schedule, no in the building every day at this time, are they going to be able to stay on top of what they need to stay on top of in order to come back into training camp fully in shape and ready to hit the ground, picking up where they left off at the end of OTAs versus having to relearn or redo more things? And Saleh also mentioned it's a young team and they're still in the middle of install, and that we won't really get an idea of what this team can be until they've had the pads on for, you know, a week and a half, because that's when the stimulus of getting hit is wearing off and you're really just starting, and the installation is over, so they're really starting to play fast and free. But still, it's extremely telling to me that they are ahead of schedule, because he said we were able to nudge them a little bit more than we planned to. At the end of the day, every practice, they want more. They want more reps. And so we are ahead of our plan. That's huge. If the coaching staff had a set plan on how they wanted to install the offense and the defense schematically, on how they wanted to, what they were expecting to see from these players on a day-to-day basis, and the players are ahead of that plan, that's a pretty big sign that this team is ahead of schedule. And on the note of these players always wanting more and always wanting more reps, Cam Ward gave a very interesting answer to me for multiple reasons when he was talking with Taylor Zarzor and Brad Hopkins on his own SiriusXM NFL interview, talking about an NFL quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback as of last night, if anyone watched the Hall of Fame game, and what he learned from this quarterback during last season. This to me was one of the best, most insightful things I got in all of these clips. So take a listen to this one.
Is there anybody right now or anybody that you were growing up that you looked at and said, man, there are things about that guy, I just love the way he's wired?
I would say, well, I watched him a lot growing up, but when I finally got a chance to talk to him, I would say Drew Brees. I believe he had called my San Fran game last year, and I got a chance to talk to him the night before the game. We just talked about, you know, everything that he did with his, you know, receivers in the offseason, the amount of reps that he had, and just him, you know, continuously telling me that, you know, get every rep you can, burn those guys out, because at the end of the day, it might be that one rep that could be for a game touchdown, or it could be, you know, it could be that rep that you didn't get to lose a game. And so everything, you know, you have to do a full pace. And those guys know that everything we do, especially from my position to their position, is full pace, because that's how, you know, I have to see it. I can't have you jog a route.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you're going to be juiced up for the game. I need you to be juiced up in practice when running routes. So him continuously stressing to me, you know, the amount of reps you get, you know, are critical, you know, in your thinking process. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, just got to be able to see windows open up. He didn't tell me the no-look stuff, but, you know, I no-look stuff too.
I've seen you
know,
do it.
And, you know, try to, you know, manipulate linebackers when it comes to the middle of the field.
So, first of all, there's a lot to break down from that clip. First of all, this desire to get more reps, it can explain Carnell Tate going to Houston. Cam has, you know, even last year got his receivers together down in Miami. He did that his last year of college at Miami, and there was one of his receivers was going to go, instead of coming to the workouts with the team in Miami, he was going to go work out with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. And Cam had famously told him, like, you're not going to be catching passes from Lamar Jackson this season, so you better be in Miami. I don't care if you're going to want to go work out with an NFL quarterback. No, you're coming to work out with your teammates. So that part he's always done. But getting more reps part from Drew Brees, every rep matters. And then you hear Robert Saleh say, you know, I asked these guys if they want more reps, and they all want more reps. Like, that to me is another sign of the growth of this team and the idea that they can be competitive this year. The idea that Cam's always wanting that extra rep because he wants to get as much work as he possibly can, getting it with his receivers. That's one part of it. The second part is just the idea that Cam sought advice from Drew Brees. I mean, I don't know if you guys know how these things work, but pretty much every game week, the TV broadcast crew that's going to be calling the game gets a chance to sit down with some players and coaches on both sides so that they have, you know, talking points to share during the broadcast. I'm sure you've heard the broadcasters say, like, we were talking to him yesterday and he told us blah, blah, blah. So those interviews are for the broadcasters to get information that they can use on the broadcast. They're not for Cam Ward to pick Drew Brees' brain about being an NFL quarterback and being a successful one at that. But that's what he used the opportunity for. And that, to me, is another sign of just kind of the mental, like, will and want to that Cam Ward has to find every possible avenue to improve all the time. And then the third thing, the thing that really stands out to me, if you've been following my work for a long time on Twitter, you will know that I used to obsess over Marcus Mariota's no-look passes. I haven't really seen that from Cam Ward. It was one of the things that, like, you don't have to be able to throw a no-look pass to be a great quarterback, but it's one of the coolest things you can do. Everyone remembers Matthew Stafford's no-look passes. Matthew Stafford threw one against the Titans when he was with the Lions that was one of the best no-look passes I've ever seen. He had the famous one in the Super Bowl when the Rams won it all. Cam taking that next step, understanding how to manipulate linebackers with his eyes over the middle of the field and make those no-look passes is really exciting. I'm going to have my eyes open for that specifically and see if I can catch them when it happens this season so I can break it down, because that, to me, is just one of the most exciting things that the quarterback can do. I have more stuff to play here. I was going to just try to catch up on the chat a little bit. It's hard to do a solo show where you are hosting the show, playing sound drops, playing clips, and keeping up with the live chat. It's a lot. Here's one from Roster Grids, though. Yes, Graver, this concept you're hitting on right now is what they've based everything on for the past 2 years since Borgo got here. It's all about the people you create the team with. 100% agree. And I think that's why Borgo's been so strict with his character stuff. Like, you can start taking chances on guys with red flags when you feel really good about the foundation and the core of your team and the leadership in your locker room, that when you bring in somebody who maybe doesn't fit that same culture character-wise, that the other players in the locker room, it's just so permeated throughout everybody that they can't help but get on board with that culture, because they know if they don't, they're not going to be playing. And those types of guys, they usually want to play more than anything else. They sometimes have selfish goals or want the ball in their hands or whatever the red flag might be. Being in a culture that the Titans are trying to create is something that can get those guys also to come on board. So I think that this is huge. The culture that they're building, the people that they have in the building. I have some other stuff I want to play that's more fun, and some stuff Cam Ward's teammates and coaches talking about him specifically, but I got to take my second break here, so we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. All right, let's continue to roll on here as we talk about why I think this Titans team is ahead of schedule and ready to compete this season. Here's Jeffrey Simmons talking about his mindset going into the offseason. Jeffrey Simmons had the best season of his career last year, obviously 11 sacks, first All-Pro nod, first team All-Pro nod of his career, another Pro Bowl added to his resume. It's easy for a guy like that who played on a team that won 3 games in back-to-back years to kind of be like, you know what? I'm in a bad situation here. There's not a lot I can do to help this team get better until the coaching staff improves, until the front office brings in some better players. So I'm just going to worry about me, get mine, get paid, which he did this offseason. That's not how Simmons operates, because Simmons is one of the leaders that this team needs. And yeah, I got on him a bit a few days ago for throwing a punch in practice. I still believe he shouldn't be the guy throwing a punch in practice. I believe it's okay to say that, you know what, Jeffrey Simmons, you could stand to get better at that one specific area. But I also understand that it sort of comes with the territory of being as aggressively ferocious-minded as Jeffrey Simmons is, and sometimes that boils over a little bit. So whatever, it is what it is. But Jeffrey Simmons is one of the leaders of this team. And here's him talking about his offseason approach. If every player on the Titans took this approach, they could be a playoff team this year. And I have a feeling more guys than we think did take this approach. Here's Jeffrey Simmons on his offseason.
Man, I first started off going into the offseason. Right after the season, not going to the playoffs, it sucks. Like, you know, so it's one of the things to where when you don't go to the playoffs, it's like, do I go party? Do I start eating bad? Do I start drinking? My mindset was, don't get comfortable. Once I get comfortable, once I say I got it, then it's time for me to hang it up. And that was my mindset going into this offseason. Even at the Pro Bowl, I'm hitting my nutritionist up. Like, can we find a chef out in San Fran to do my meals and things of that nature? So it's one of the things for me, man. It was like attack the offseason like we just won a Super Bowl. I never have felt to win a Super Bowl, but I want that feeling. So my mindset is attack the offseason. Stick to my nutrition, stick to my diet. And it's just consistency, like how consistent I could be, not just with the game of football, but with my day-to-day life.
That kind of consistency is important, and I love what he said, that the day I feel comfortable is the day I hang it up. Hopefully that's not for, you know, another decade or so, because Titans need Jeffrey Simmons around. But this is an interesting comment from Atlas. Can be the LaJuan of Simmonses. That's a funny way to put it. But yeah, Taylor LaJuan was a very vocal leader. He had some off-field antics that got under people's skin at times. Maybe he didn't always take everything so seriously, which I think is a good thing. You don't always need to be taking everything super seriously. Jeffrey Simmons obviously takes his craft very seriously, and I really think his approach rubs off on his teammates, because everybody seems to have that approach. Everybody that talks at the podium, everybody that speaks to media, you hear this a consistent message coming from these guys, and that starts at the top down. That starts with Borgonzi and Sala communicating that message down to their staff and filtering it down to the players, and that's how you know that this Titans team is in good hands at the top, because it seems like they have the right people in charge, and those right people in charge are bringing in the right people to execute everything on the day-to-day. I have some more clips I want to play. I have a bunch of clips. I might have gotten too many clips. Here's Cam Ward talking about the difference between winning and losing, and understanding that it comes down to slim margins. And this, to me, is sort of another semi-shot at Brian Callahan, maybe not as directly as some of the other ones, but this is a really interesting answer from Cam Ward about why he thinks his team is ready to compete this season.
It's real good. Starting with Coach Sala, the same person, you know, each and every day, coming in the building, holding us, you know, to a high standard, playing high-level football. And it's something that, you know, us guys in the locker room, you know, we want to do. We're willing to do it. Because we have guys everyone's been a part of winning teams, everyone's been a losing teams, and we all know the difference between winning and losing. So slim, you know, margins of error that you can't have, you know, key moments of the game. And that's something that, you know, we're consistently striving for each and every day. And once we get there, you know, we'll be a top team.
He also mentioned as part of that follow-up to that answer that they had a lot of one-score losses last year. He said about half our losses, I think, were one-possession games. And when you think about like a good team, half your losses is a small number. When you think about the Titans team, half your losses is a huge number, because they lost 14 games last year. So I'm not sure if the math on that is exact, but I do think that he's right. And the fact that they have acknowledged the slim margins, that you got to make a play when you got to make a play, is something I talked to all season about last year with Brian Callahan and his team never being prepared for that big moment. There was like one game in his whole tenure, maybe two, where they maybe were prepared for that big moment. It was the Cardinals game last year, which, again, I've said this multiple times on the show, it took three insane once a season level mistakes by the Cardinals in the same game, maybe once a decade for the play, once in a lifetime, the interception turned touchdown. I mean, I've never seen a play like that before, and I don't know if I'll ever see it again. Combined with Kyler Murray having a snap in the Titans red zone, bounce off his face mask at the Titans recovered, and then of course Amari DiMercato dropping a ball as he's running into the end zone before he actually crosses the goal line. Like, that's the only time that Brian Callahan's team ever met the moment. Cam Ward, game-winning drive in that one, fourth quarter comeback. And so having a coaching staff that understands the situational aspect of the game and understands that, like, you know, 40 minutes of a 60-minute game are not, I don't want to say unimportant or irrelevant, but not nearly as important as third downs and red zone on either side of the ball. Like, understanding those slim margins, I think, is another sign of growth for this young Titans team. And Cam Ward also talked about situational football. I forgot to say something. Sorry. I want to go back to when Cam was talking about Drew Brees, because there's another thing in there that stands out to me about Cam Ward's leadership, about making sure his guys are running their routes at full speed in practice. His exact words were, "You're going to be juiced up for the game, so I need you to be juiced up in practice and run the route." And the way that he said it, you can almost hear him saying it to somebody when he's frustrated with them, like, "Hey man, I need you to run this route. Like, it's in a game. Run the route. Don't BS around. Like, we need to work on this. We need to get this timing and this chemistry down." That sign of leadership. And then, I don't know if I played this clip yet or not, so I'm going to play another one, and maybe it'll be in here, but I'll play another clip. This is Cam talking about what he improved on the most this season.
I think I became a better...
What he improved on the most this off season, sorry.
I think I became a better processor since having Dable. And it's not necessarily pre-snap, because I could tell you every coverage where the ball is supposed to go, as soon as I get the ball in my hands, I know where everyone's going to end up. It's more of thinking in the O-line standpoint, from who we're going against on the D-line, I need to have a shot clock in my head on what the defense is willing to give me, what they don't want to give me, and knowing when I need to check the ball down at a certain amount of time, or when I need to scramble around, you know, and make certain types of plays. It's all situationally that I got better at. And I think another thing that's, you know, helped me just continue to, you know, learn more about my body, more about my base and how I need to throw the ball, you know, every chance I get, unless I have to, you know, have a crazy type of off-platform throw. And I think Dable and Coach Shea, the quarterback coach, helped me a lot with that.
Situational football. We've been talking a lot about it on this show, Justin Mello and I. And it's one of the emphases of this offseason is that you got to be good when you need to be good. And that's, it seems to be a theme here. And I agree with this comment that I saw during that clip playing from Kevin Hammer. Vrabes always had us ready for certain situations. I believe this staff understands the same things. I do too. You get the feeling that, I mean, this is a really experienced staff. They have four former head coaches on the staff right now. Robert Saleh, obviously head coach of the Jets. Brian Daboll, obviously head coach of the Giants. Gus Bradley has been a head coach in his past. And Bones Fossil was an interim head coach when Jeff Fisher got fired with the Rams. So that's four guys who have seen a lot of football. Robert Saleh did talk about this as well. I don't have this clip, but talked about how bringing in an experienced staff like this, not just working out, like not just knowing how to implement their schemes, but knowing how to be teachers. That was the thing he emphasized, how to be teachers. And I've always said that. And Mike Vrabel used to say that all the time, like we're teachers first. And that to me, it just shows that I really do believe, again, for the fifth time this episode, the Titans have the right people in place. Now, I want to play some clips of these guys talking about Cam Ward also. So let's get to Jeff Simmons on Cam Ward first. This is another sign to me that the leadership is in place in the building. You got Jeffrey Simmons on one side of the ball and Cam on the other side. This also demonstrates, again, Cam's just desire to do whatever it takes to be great. So listen to Simmons talking about Cam Ward, and you might understand why Titans fans are so excited.
So much growth, man. The way he walked into the building, his demeanor, the way he attacked the field. I was just telling the guys on the pivot the other day, man, Cam came to me and was like, you know, it happens. Practice, false start, and it just wasn't clicking for the offense that day. Don't get me wrong. Everything wasn't good. It wasn't bad. But Cam was like, and we had to do push-up that day, but he came to me and was like, but what I need to do, man? What is it? Like, something off right now. What I need to do? I'm like, Cam, this is your team. When you speak to the offense, when you speak to the team, everyone gravitate towards that. So you, with him, man, just to see how he attacked his job and attacked coming to a guy like myself who's been in the league a little bit, asking me questions, what I need to do better. Like, you see the growth and you see the will and the want to turn things around here. And I'm excited. I got his back and he know that.
The fact that Jeffrey Simmons is excited is a big deal to me because, again, this is a guy who could, you know, he would have every excuse to be a little bit jaded at this point. You know, he's heard this story before. Brian Callahan, oh, we got the hot new coordinator coming in as our head coach. Oh, we signed a whole bunch of free agents that, you know, are in the vision of this new leadership. And then they went out and won six games total over the next 2 years. Now they're sort of repeating that cycle, right? Oh, we got in a new head coach that everyone's excited about, bringing a new energy in the building. We signed a whole bunch of free agents that know this staff. But something's different, right? Jeffrey Simmons can feel it. Something is different. The energy around this team that this coaching staff brings and that the young players on this team bring as they continue to grow into, you know, good NFL players. And Cam Ward continuing to grow as a leader. You know, how do I get my offensive line to not false start? Like, asking these types of questions. This is exactly what you want to see when we talk about growth and development. We're watching it play out in real time. I want to play Robert Saleh talking about Cam Ward. He talked about him both to NFL Network when they were at practice yesterday, and he talked about it with Zarzor and Hopkins on the 4th of August. Here's that first clip of Robert Saleh talking about Cam Ward. What do you think? Hey, Mr. Saleh, what do you think of Cam Ward?
He's a dog. I mean this in the best way possible. Like, he is he's always bugging me for more reps. He goes, give us another rack. Give us another shot. He's always talking smack with the defense, you know, which is new for me. Quarterback usually going right back to the yeah. coordinator to get a call. And he's so fiery and competitive and talented, can make any throw. And, you know, I was actually talking to someone today, you know, like I always feel like from a defensive perspective, the great quarterbacks know when you bust, right? Yep. Like, there's space and they know where to throw the ball. Yep. They find it. And instinctually, like, when we bust, we're cooked. He sees it. He feels it. That's awesome. And he just lets the ball rip. And
he's got a long way to go, which we all understand and he understands. But like he's one of those kids that he's just relentless from the second he wakes up till he goes to bed. He's trying to find a way to get better.
And we're seeing that. We're seeing that relentlessness, trying to find a way to get better. But I love what he said there that, you know, the great quarterbacks just know when you bust. And he said, when we bust, we're cooked. What better ringing endorsement can you give from the head coach who's also the defensive coordinator, who is, you know, hoping to see his defense succeed every time they take the field, but also obviously hoping to see the offense succeed. He talked about that too with Taylor Zarzor and Brad Hopkins, talking about what it's like watching his quarterback make a play against his defense. And this, to me, this is one of the funnier answers that I have on of all of them. And then Cam responding to Sala because Zarzor and Hopkins told him what Sala said. Anyway, here's Robert Sala talking about what it's like watching his quarterback make a play on his defense.
Elite talent. He's making throws out here that are, you know, like as a defensive guy, you know, he's burning the defense, and Gus like all upset, and I'm like, yes. And we were in our defensive staff room the other day, and he stepped up in the pocket yesterday, and he threw a dart, I think it was to Ridley, on the goal line, and I looked at the defensive staff, we're all watching it together, and I was like, screw you guys, man, I'm glad he made that throw.
Yeah.
So. But no, he's a talented young man. It's very important to him. He's got a long way to go. You know, there's still a lot of things that he's got to clean up. So he's no one. Let's not confuse the excitement for crowning. And I think he knows that. Daboll understands that. His teammates understand that. And the cool thing is like I just said, he understands it, and he's relentless in his pursuit to get better.
So another echoing there about. Sorry, everyone in the chat is having fun with me talking about busting. Obviously, coverage bust is what I'm referring to, you dirty-minded pervs. Get your mind out of the gutter. Sorry. But yes, the fact that he's sitting there going, yes, when Cam Ward makes a nice throw, talking about the play, that play to Ridley is talking about is the one that we've talked about on this show. It was a big highlight of camp, a 3rd and 15, you know, after they get backed up by a false start in the red zone, and he steps up in the pocket and makes that throw to Ridley. And everyone in the defensive room is groaning as they watch the tape of this, and Sala saying, screw you guys, I love that he made that throw. Sala is probably so happy to have a quarterback that he can count on to get the team out of jams like that and make those plays. Again, situational football. You got to have it. 3rd and 15. And Cam talking about how he's learned to process better this offseason thanks to Brian Daboll and Shea Tierney. And then going out and showing it in practice when they're still in the install phase of training camp. They're not really into the big time phase of training camp yet. But I love that answer from Sala. Love the personality that he's showing when he gives that answer. It feels like Zarzor and Hopkins start to break through the coach speak mold that these guys naturally default to whenever they're doing an interview like this. But I love that he gave us that insight. I'd love to see some like Hard Knock style behind the scenes footage of the defensive staff watching that and everyone reacting, but I don't think we're ever going to get it, but would be pretty cool if we did. Anyway, here's Cam Ward reaction to hearing that Sala told this to Zarzor and Hopkins.
I know that's how he is too, and I know it's on the interception I have too, he'll be happy, but he also mad I threw a pick like that.
Yep.
But I mean, it's awesome because, you know, you get a coach who he's about both sides for the ball. He wants his guys to be great on both sides. He's fun to play for because, you know, he makes everything, you know, real football. We don't come out here and just do, you know, just scripted stuff, everything. It's always call it like the real game, and it's always game-like atmosphere too.
So to me, that is what I was, I wasn't sure if I'd played that one earlier or not. I refreshed my browser during that break to try to get my fuzziness to go away. It looks like I'm coming in a lot more clear now. That was the clip I was trying to remember if I'd played yet or not. So first of all, here in Cam's reaction to Sala, again, we're getting some personality out of these guys. It's not just all stock coach speak answers, which, by the way, I know there's been a lot of chatter in the live chat here about Cam's constant ums and uhs and pauses. And somebody had a funny comment about how that was whenever he wants to drop a cuss word, but he can't because he's on national TV or radio. I think that could be part of it, but good comment there, Atlas. But I think what is really happening is he's like trying to parse out what he can really say and what he really wants to say, and if anything he's saying is going to be taken and spun the wrong way in the media. But then he gets flowing with an answer like that last one. And one of the things that stands out the most to me about that last answer is the way they run practice. Not everything is scripted. You have a lot more move the ball. It feels like a real game, getting us actually ready to play real football. That's another shot at Brian Callahan. Brian Callahan and his staff ran most periods scripted, and then they would throw in these move the ball periods, call it periods, every once in a while. This staff is the opposite. This staff understands that the only way to get ready for a game is to make practice as hard or harder than the game itself so that when you get to the game, it feels a little bit easier. And the only way to do that is to rep it over and over again. It all comes back to what Drew Brees told Cam Ward and what Sala told the NFL Network crew, that these guys want the reps. They want the work. And that is another sign to me that this team is poised and ready to take that next step. I just have a few clips left to play here. Actually, I'm not even sure if I have clips, plural, left to play here. I have one on Cam Ward talking about his relationship with Brian Daboll. And, you know, I don't know what the deal is with this serious interview series or why there aren't videos, like full video interviews of this on the internet somewhere, because they clearly recorded it with video. But when I went to find the full interviews, all I could find was audio, which is why you're seeing it with that big card instead of actually watching these guys answer these questions. But serious tweeted this answer out as a clip on social media. So we got the video to go along with this one. Cam Ward, is Brian Daboll and that relationship everything you thought it would be? He's asked.
Is it working out that way?
Oh, it is. It's a perfect match. We're actually, you know, the same person. He's just an older version of it. We're both hotheads. We can both get to that point. but he's taught me to be more calmer. And it's just, you know, how I handle stuff, you know, on the field, even though I handle it the right way. But, you know, it's the biggest thing that we preach is keep it tight. You know, we're going to have bad plays, we're going to have spurts. But there also is a time where, you know, I have to, you know, get on somebody's ass or not. But, you know, it's also a time where, you know, in bad plays, and that's the perfect time for me to lead and just motivate them and not try to, you know, push them too hard, because if they make a bad play, they already think about it. So I don't need to continue to emphasize it. And that's something that he's helped me on, seeing that side of his point of view. But, you know, he has us in a great spot right now, offense, especially early on in camp. We're making, you know, some great plays. We're making some bad plays as well, from the quarterback room all around too. But, you know, he's seeing the game from a quarterback's, you know, view.
So, first thing that stands out, we're actually the same person. He's just the older version. What? No. I don't know. That to me was very funny. Talking about how he knows when he needs to get on the O-line's ass, but also knows when sometimes that's not the right approach. And just being in sync with his offensive coordinator, seeing the game the same way, that's one of the most crucial aspects of playing the quarterback position. I was thinking about this the other day, actually, maybe it was last night, what does it take to win in the NFL these days? It basically takes a pretty solid to great defense and an offensive coordinator who knows what they're doing. And then throw in a head coach that can coach you through the situational aspects of the game, uses timeouts correctly, challenge when he needs to challenge, and generally get the team motivated and ready to play and ready to execute in those big moments. That's all it takes to win in the NFL these days. And if the Titans have a top 10 or top 5 quarterback to go along with it, that makes it way more exciting to watch the games, because it's not all defensive slugfests. But you don't necessarily need that to win a game. The Athletic QB tiers ranking, Mike Sando polling 50 GMs, coaches, coordinators, etc. around the league and tiering out the quarterbacks. Sam Darnold came in at 14th. And Sam Darnold just won the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts came in at 17th. And Jalen Hurts won the Super Bowl the year before Darnold did. So you don't need a top 10, top 5 quarterback. You need all those other aspects working. And then having a great quarterback on top of that is like a cherry on top. I think that that's different from the way the NFL was even 10 years ago. But we're in a defensive revolution era of the NFL right now. Everyone returning to under center, heavy formations, 2-3 tight ends, trying to take advantage of the defense, because defenses have caught up to the offensive explosion of the NFL that we saw, you know, about 10 years ago when Mahomes was throwing for 5,000 yards and those kinds of those numbers aren't happening anymore. The league leader in passing yards last year wasn't close to 5,000 yards. And a couple seasons ago, four or five seasons ago, we had multiple guys throwing for 5,000 yards. Justin Herbert threw for 5,000. Like, that's the way. Last year, Matthew Stafford led the league with 4,700 yards. Goff next with 4,500. Like, that's the ceiling in today's NFL. But having an offensive coordinator in sync with your quarterback is one of the most crucial elements. Even if you're not going to throw for 4,500 yards, you got to be able to execute again. It all comes down to those situational moments. So those are all the clips I have to play. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Highly encourage you to go listen to those interviews on SiriusXM yourself. NFL Network posted two different 10-minute videos on YouTube, the full Jeffrey Simmons interview, the full Cam Ward interview, the full Robert Saleh interview, and the full Carnell Tate interview. I encourage everyone to check them out. The Sirius thing, yeah, it's behind a paywall, but guess what? You can get 3 free months of SiriusXM just by signing up. Now, you do have to put in your credit card information, and after 3 months, it automatically starts billing you, and they make it 3 months so that you totally forget, and then you don't end up canceling, and then you end up paying $12 a month. I signed up for the 3-month free trial, pulled these clips, and then canceled my subscription, so I don't have to worry about it auto-billing me after 3 months. But I would give you guys that recommendation to go do that, but don't forget to cancel, because I don't want to cost anybody $12 a month to listen to something that you're not actually ever going to listen to ever again. All right, I got to take a break here, and then I'm going to come back, hit a ton of stuff in the live chat, answer some questions, and just hang out with you guys for a little bit longer. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. All right, pacing here might be slower because I'm going to be trying to read the live chats that I've starred that I want to hit. So apologies if I get quiet for a moment or just take a second to move the show along as I look at these live chats. Let's go back to the expectations. The whole point of this episode, Titans are ahead of schedule. Titans are ready to compete. That's my thesis, based on the people they have in the building, based on the leadership, based on the fact that they brought in a bunch of guys who know the system already, coaches who have worked together before. It doesn't feel the same as a typical new head coach, new regime coming in, trying to get everybody up to speed, because you have coaches that have coached with this head coach before. You have players that have played for the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, the head coach. That consistency, to me, is the number one marker of expectations. It's okay to let your expectations get a little higher than they have been the last 2 years. Well, I don't know how high your expectations were the last 2 years, but a little higher than the performance of the last 2 years might dictate your expectations should be. So let's hit some. There's a lot of comments about them here. Titans haven't played a snap of meaningful, haven't played a snap in meaningful games. Not buying anything until the regular season starts. James Henderson. I totally think that that's a fair place to be. And until we see it week one against the Jets and really understand what this team is like, and really, like, weeks 2, 3, and 4, because we all know week one is a liar. Crazy things happen in week one every year. I think that's fair. I think it's okay to let your expectations start to creep up. But this comment from Kevin Hammer, key thing to our hearts, let our expectations be low and they can exceed them. I do agree with that. I've said that on the show before. Expectations are a thief of joy. Because you have expectations, you can get disappointed. If you have very low expectations, you're never disappointed because it's easy to clear that bar. That said, I think that it's okay to let your expectations. Nobody should be expecting this team to win the Super Bowl this year. I'm not saying it's impossible. Cam Ward at the top of the show said it's a realistic expectation for this team to compete in the Super Bowl. Far Sendor, I still have extremely low expectations. I still feel like it's too early to expect anything from them. Lulu and Stitch, my optimism is being capped at about 7 wins max. I can't get hurt again. And the big one, Far Sendor, Titans lose to the Jets. I'm not going to listen or watch YouTube Titans content for a week. No way I could listen for a week about what went wrong. Well, that's sad for me, because now I have me and Justin, we have a lot riding on that Titans win, because we don't want to lose you guys to, the depression of tuning out Titans content because they were so bad. So hopefully the Titans don't disappoint us in week one. An Atlas with three legs, the other Atlas. I don't want all the media calling the Titans a surprise team. I want to go in unnoticed and take people by surprise instead of setting the expectation. Totally fair again, and Kevin Hammer again. I think my expectations for this year, score more than 18 points a game, which I think we can easily do. I think a proper place to set your expectations is somewhere between 7 and 9 wins. I think if they win less than 7 games this year, I will be disappointed. And I think, obviously, it's possible. Obviously, all this is hope season. Everything that's happening right now inspires hope for all 32 teams across the league. I'm sure Panthers fans are excited about Haynes King right now, and Cardinals fans must be thrilled with what they saw from Carson Beck last night. And so it is that time of year where even the worst teams in the league feel like they have a chance. So I don't want to get too caught up in that. I definitely feel like I'm getting caught up in that a little bit. But I really also think that there are signs here that it's different this time. We know we can compare it to 2 years ago when Brian Callahan came in, and there were a ton of signs that we were encouraged by. But when you look back now at what this team is made of, what they're saying about the new coaching staff, and again, all the shade that they're indirectly and unintentionally throwing at last year's coaching staff with the way practices are structured, with the energy in the building, with the situational football aspects, like, it does feel different. Jeffrey Simmons is legitimately excited for a reason. So again, I think it's fair to keep your expectations a little bit lower. To me, the season is a win if we get to Thanksgiving and the Titans are still in the playoff hunt. That's a massive win. You don't want to be out of it by Thanksgiving, and the Titans have been out of it by Thanksgiving for multiple years in a row. So, yeah, I think that's like the fair place to put the expectations. And I think if they win 7 games or 9 games or 10 games, God forbid somehow they achieve that, that would put them way ahead of schedule. I think like 7 wins is more or less on schedule. 8 or 9 wins, that's ahead of schedule. And I think that they could be in that position this year with the guys that they've brought in. Robert Saleh is going to have to be a little bit better head coach than he was in New York. But remember, he won 7 games with the Jets twice. You know, in one of those years, he had Zach Wilson at quarterback. So if he can win 7 games with the Jets with Zach Wilson at quarterback, I feel like Cam Ward and the Titans can help Robert Saleh win more than 7 games, or at least get to 7 games this season. Running through more comments here. This is about Cam talking to Drew Brees from Kevin Hammer. Cam is always going to pick someone's brain on how he can get better. Love that he's never complacent. Me too. Me too. Informed Watcher, this is about in reference to the no-look passes that Cam says he's been throwing or wants to keep working on. I think the cross-body passes are cooler than no-look passes. I think they can make for better highlights for sure because, you know, a no-look pass, to even know if it's a no-look pass, you kind of have to be able to see the quarterback's eyes or at least see which way his helmet is pointing, and not every camera angle will always show you that. So I agree the crossbody passes are very, very cool and they make for great content for highlight videos and stuff like that. But the no-look passes, to me, signals a mastery of the position, like a true understanding of how to manipulate defenses, where the space is going to be, understanding the offense and the timing. Like, in order to execute a no-look pass, you have to really be, your awareness has to be through the roof, through the ceiling, and that, to me, is why I think it's a cooler play, because it just shows such a mental execution level that the crossbody passes is an incredible physical feat. The no-look passes is an incredible mental feat, and that's why I think, to me, it stands out a little bit more. And yes, Kevin Hammer, Dable did make the comment that Cam is in the film room before anyone else gets there and already watching film breakdown. We played that clip on the show earlier this week, and I think that is, I mean, we've heard about Cam Ward for years now, since before the draft last year, that he's the first guy in the building. He continues to be that guy, you know, not getting complacent, kind of like what Jeffrey Simmons said, not getting comfortable and continuing to always just want to get better. He told Taylor Zarzer and Brad Hopkins that he's already mastered Brian Daboll's offense, or at least he feels that way. And remember, they're still going through the install phase. That interview happened on Tuesday, so like they were really still going through the install phase back on Tuesday. They're obviously a few days ahead of that now. But for him to feel like he's already really comfortable in the offense is a huge deal, again, in terms of being ahead of schedule and hitting the ground running. That is the theme of today's pod. I didn't show this one yet. Roster grids. Having the right people on the team, staff, and everywhere in the building solves almost every problem, including talent. The right people are always more likely to succeed than the wrong people. I couldn't agree more. And maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit too much, but I really do feel like the Titans have the right people in charge and on the team. Obviously, they still need to continue adding talent to be like a true contender. They could use a premier edge rusher. Maybe somebody will emerge, but you know, we've said that about different position groups almost every year. It feels like, oh, maybe somebody unknown will emerge at this spot where they really need somebody to be a difference maker. So I'm not going to bank on somebody emerging. I think they're going to have to add a tackle at some point, whether that's to replace Dan Moore or JC Latham. They're going to have to add another edge rusher. If Alec Iemanner is healthy and proves to be a capable wide receiver 2/3, then Tate Robinson and Iemanner, you may not need a playmaker on the outside in next year's draft. You probably need to continue adding cornerback depth. You probably need to add like a legitimate premier playmaker in the backfield to take that true next step. You know, Ken Walker just won Super Bowl MVP. Saquon Barkley led the Eagles to a Super Bowl the year before that. Like, having that guy in the backfield that the defense has to focus on can be a big deal. But all that said, you know, every team, we talked about it yesterday, every team still has holes going into any season. So the fact that the Titans are where they're at now, I do think they are ahead of schedule, even if they still have some needs on the roster. Here's an interesting question from Kevin Hammer. Graver, do you agree with Tic Tac Titans that JC is a fake tough guy? I don't know who saw this. I kind of called Tic Tac out on, I called Tyler out on Twitter the other day because he tweeted that Jeffrey Simmons hates JC Latham, like clearly can't stand him, and that the fight in practice proves it. Now, look, I don't know whether Jeffrey Simmons hates JC Latham or not. I know that a training camp fight doesn't prove anything about how Jeffrey Simmons feels about JC Latham. I know Simmons has talked about more last offseason than this offseason, but talked about wanting to help Latham take that next step as a leader, as a player who is on his, you know, on top of his stuff and taking care of what he needs to take care of. I don't think J.C. Latham is necessarily a fake tough guy. I think J.C. Latham maybe doesn't have the same fire in his belly that somebody like Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons has, but I don't think that that necessarily is going to prevent him from being a good player. I think the most telling thing to me is the way that the coaching staff has raved about Latham and Mike Borgonzi raving about Latham. And I know that they're going to get up there and praise their players because that's what coaches and executives do in press conferences when they're speaking to media. But again, like I've talked about this before, there are specific examples they're citing of why they feel excited about a player. And I'm willing to give J.C. Latham a clean slate, a fresh start to this season. We know he's dealing with a lot of injuries last year that definitely hampered his play. We know he was dealing with playing for Brian Callahan, which is a disadvantage for every player on the roster. So let's see how he looks this year in a new system when we actually get a chance to look at him with pads on. Let's see how the first preseason game goes. You know, if he's out there with the first team for a series or two or however long the starters play, like, then we can start getting a better assessment. But no, I don't think he's a fake tough guy. I think that he's, I mean, anyone who puts their body on the line on a weekly basis to play football is a real tough guy. So no, I don't agree with that take. Mr. Chainsaw, if you are on a team with a leader like Simmons, you can't help but follow that lead. I totally agree. This is in reference to me talking about how Jeffrey Simmons approaches the offseason and that rubbing off on his teammates. And yes, now we get to the bust, the coverage bust. There were a lot of comments about busting in the chat when I said that. And football terms, I agree, Farsender, can sound so perverted at times. Penetration, all this. I mean, we keep talking about pausing on this show because football terms naturally sound very suggestive, I think is the word. They're very suggestive. An angry fetus. I'm so hyped now, Graver. 77-0 against the Jets, playing like it's Madden. See, that was the point of today's show. Get you all hyped up so you're ready for the scrimmage tonight. So you go into it super excited out there at Nissan Stadium. I hope you guys are going to be in attendance. Just, I wish I could be in attendance. If I lived in Nashville, I'd definitely be there tonight. Although, I don't know if I would, actually, because tomorrow is my wife's birthday. We're going to dinner with my family tonight. Me and her are going out for dinner tomorrow night to celebrate. So I actually probably would have had plans anyway. But still, it's going to be awesome. I was talking about the Cardinals win. The Cards win cost us the J-Love pick. Are we happy it worked out the way it did? Now, shortly after this question came in from Mike the Ear Guy, somebody else responded that the Titans probably would have taken Tate at 3 anyway, which is information that we didn't get until after the draft, but all indications that we got from insiders, from media appearances, from everybody after the draft did indicate that the Titans had Carnell Tate potentially at the top of their board. And I do think that they probably would have taken Tate over Love, even if they had the third pick and Love was still on the board. And I agree with the comment that said, they're glad that we won the Cardinals game because we didn't have to make that decision that would have divided the fan base. And can you imagine my reaction, guys, after the offseason, draft season that I had personally, if the Titans had selected Carnell Tate with Jeremiah Love on the board? No, I'm glad it worked out the way that it did. And speaking of busting an angry fetus, I think we're going to find out how much of a bust Brian Callahan really was very quickly. I totally agree with that as well. And I think what one of the most interesting random coincidences of the NFL offseason is Brian Daboll leaving Jackson Dart in New York and coming to coach Cam Ward, while Brian Callahan leaves Nashville coaching Cam Ward to go coach Jackson Dart in New York. And having that as a comparison point all season long is going to be a really fun thing to track. Definitely a minor thing, but a very fun thing to track. All right, I got to catch up because while I was doing all of that, I missed a whole bunch of comments that came in while I was responding to them. So I keep saying Kevin Hammer. And it's obviously I'm dyslexic in some ways because it's clearly Kevin Hamner, and yet I've read it Kevin Hammer every time. My sincerest apologies. Names are important. Sorry, Kevin. It won't happen again. This is a very true and interesting point from Travis. From Travis, the Titans' way is to get extremely excited during the offseason, only to be heartbroken during the season. Hopefully this year is different. That is true, and it's happened every year that I've been a fan. I feel like it's part of the fan experience, I think, to get excited during the offseason. And then when your team is bad, naturally you will be disappointed. This year does feel a little different to me. Maybe I'm crazy. Roster grids. I felt crazy for most of the past year because nobody seems to grasp how strict of a guiding principle the people aspect really is to the regime. It's literally the secret formula. I couldn't agree more. Has anybody here watched Hard Knocks yet? Episode 1 came out on Tuesday. One of Mike McDonald's first addresses is talking about how when Phil Jackson came in as the coach of the Bulls, Michael Jordan was already that dude, averaging 35 points a game. But the Bulls did not have postseason success until after Phil Jackson arrived. Because Phil Jackson came in and said, look, Michael, you're great, but it's about the team. This is a team sport. And if basketball is a team sport, I mean, what is football? There's no more team sport than football, where all 11 guys have to be in sync, where you are really only as strong as your weakest link, where one weak spot on your roster can sink a play from being the difference between being a play being successful or a failure. So yeah, the team aspect is very important, playing for the guy next to you. And that all comes down to the people. So I totally agree with you, Roster Grids. We saw the Seahawks win the Super Bowl last year. It defied all expectations. I mean, people thought they'd be a good team, but nobody thought they were winning the Super Bowl this time last year. Again, I don't think the Titans are winning the Super Bowl. I'm not getting crazy. But yeah, I think that the people, like, you really cannot underrate that aspect or overrate that aspect. Atlas can honestly say he didn't want Callahan, and he wanted him gone by the end of week 2, his first year. That was, you know, those first two games under Callahan, it really did feel like Will Levis caused the team to melt down and lose. The pick six against the Bears, the fumble against the Jets. And then we really started to see Callahan unravel from there. But it did feel more like a Levis problem at first, until it became obvious that Callahan was just not a good coach. Da Beta says, I'm in a place where I would like the Titans to be good again, but if they have one more down season, I wouldn't be too upset, especially with how deep the 2027 draft looks. But that's just me. I kind of understand where you're coming from. I'm also ready as a fan to move beyond the let's get a high draft pick thing. And I think the fact that it's a deep class actually works against this mindset that you have. Because when it's a shallow class, there's only 4 or 5 blue chip players or whatever, you got to get in the top 5 to get one of those guys. When it's a deep class, when there's expected to be possibly 4 or more quarterbacks drafted in the first round, you know, every time a quarterback is drafted, every team that doesn't need a quarterback, that's one more player that gets pushed down the board that they could potentially take. So with such a heavy quarterback class coming out, and you got multiple offensive tackles, multiple defensive ends, Jeremiah Smith, like, there is a lot of talent entering this next draft. And we say that every year, so we'll see how this college football season goes and where that talent ends up. But actually, it's not a bad year to go win 7 or 8 games, because you might get a player who, in this past year's draft that was light on top-heavy talent, that player that's going 6th overall in last year's draft might go 12th or 13th overall in next year's draft when you got all the quarterbacks and all these other blue-chip players. So it's actually not a bad year to go try to win 7, 8, 9, 10 games and still get a really good player in the draft next year to take you from competing for the playoffs to potentially competing for the Super Bowl. Yes, the Vegas win total for the Titans is 7. I think it's actually 6.5, but it's juiced towards the over, which means you win less money for betting the over than you would win for betting the under. But yeah, I would take the over on 6.5 for the Titans. Absolutely, I would. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, talking about week 1. Could definitely be a blowout win. But even if that happens, most of the next few games are rough. Got to temper the expectations all season. I agree with that, Roster Grids. I think they play, the Eagles week 2, the Giants week 3. So you got the Sala Jets Bowl week 1. You play the Eagles week 2, which if they win that game, that's going to send us our hype over into overdrive. Then you play the Giants week 3. You got the Dable Giants Bowl week 3. It's a lot of fun storylines early in the season. I don't have the schedule memorized from there. I don't actually remember who they play in week 4, but I can look it up. Oh, at Baltimore week 4, against Houston week 5, at Indy week 6. So we got Jets, Eagles, Giants, Ravens, Texans, Colts. If the Titans come out of that stretch 3-3, first of all, they'll have already matched last year's win total. I would say the 3 winnable games in that stretch are Jets, Giants, and then hopefully you take one of the division games, or you upset the Eagles, or you upset the Ravens, right? Then they go on to play the Browns, which, you know, depending on how their quarterback situation shakes out, right now I would say that that's a game the Titans should consider winnable. Then you go at Cincinnati versus Jacksonville, at Dallas. There are some tough games on this schedule. Late in the season, they get the Lions, they get the Steelers, who, that could be an interesting, the last game at Nissan Stadium against the Steelers. Titan, that could be a winnable game, depending on how the Steelers start to look this year. They play at the Raiders. That could be a winnable game, depending on how the Raiders look under Clint Kubiak. They play the Commanders fairly late in the season, December 6th. I don't want to say anything wrong, but, you know, Jaden Daniels might have a health issue, you know, an injury-prone issue. They don't play them until December. Maybe they don't even have to play Jaden Daniels. That would make that a pretty winnable game as well. All right, we've been going for a while now. I'll answer a few more questions and then wrap up this stream. Atlas asks, does Falk not look incredibly skinny to be an edge rusher? I know he's a giant, but he looks so small. That's kind of a 21-year-old thing, you know? This guy has never been in an NFL professional strength and conditioning weight training program. He's going to be in that now, probably trying to get a little bit lighter to run a faster 40 time during the draft prep stuff. So he's still putting that back on. He still has to really develop his body. Look at the way that the rookies from last year have come into this season. You guys keep making fun of me because I said that Alec Iamander's arms looked incredibly veiny. But that's the kind of transformation we're talking about. Gunnar Helm is another one. Cam Ward, you know, taking his fitness very seriously this offseason is another one. J.C. Latham, the transition he went through from his rookie to sophomore year. Like, this is a thing with rookies. And so, yeah, Falk does look a little skinny right now. He's got to put some muscle mass on that frame. But he has the frame to carry that kind of muscle. So I do think we'll see that. You know, this time next year, let's check in on this one, Atlas, this time next year on what Femi's musculature looks like. And you guys can hit me with the pause if you want, but I'm fine. There's a lot of football terms that sound suggestive. We've already covered it. Here's an actual question from When Grant Attacks. How worried are we about pressure off the edge? Our edges seem to be good against the run, but unknown with pass rush, does Sala's scheme factor into this? Yes, absolutely Sala's scheme factors into this. Now, it's important to remember the San Francisco 49ers did not have a lot of sacks last year with Robert Sala. They also had a lot of injuries to their defensive line. But here's the thing about 2026 NFL, is that pressure doesn't have to come from the edge to be effective pressure. And in fact, going all the way back to, you know, Tom Brady losing Super Bowls to the Giants, they always talked about Tom Brady's kryptonite was pressure up the middle. The year that the, Tom Brady pressure up the middle. So, that, to me, the fact that you have Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers in the middle of your defense, Jeffrey Simmons is going to start the game drawing double teams. As soon as John Franklin Myers starts abusing his one-on-one matchup, or Jermaine Johnson on the outside, or Jacob Martin on third downs, or maybe Femi or Keldrick Falk get in on that action as well, as soon as another offensive lineman starts feeling the pressure and getting beat in one-on-one matchups, he's going to start asking for help. And then they're going to have to start, you know, figuring out on which snap do we want to double team this guy? Do we want to double team Simmons? And whoever gets a one-on-one is going to have a real chance to wreck any given passing play or run play for that matter. I don't think the Titans have the best edge room. Obviously, they probably don't have a top 15 edge room in the NFL, but they have a top 3 defensive tackle interior pressure room. And that is going to make a big difference. And you don't necessarily need to have a premier Myles Garrett level edge rusher. Not that anyone is a Myles Garrett level edge rusher besides Myles Garrett. But if you have that interior that can get after the quarterback, the edge rushers get more one-on-ones. They can do more of a contain when the defensive tackle Simmons or Franklin Myers forces a quarterback to roll out of the pocket. Suddenly that makes the job of the tackles blocking the ends a lot harder as the quarterback's rolling out into space, gives them a chance to clean up some plays and get some cleanup sacks. So I do think that the Titans are going to get plenty of pressure, and Robert Saleh's scheme, you know, Robert Saleh doesn't blitz a lot, but I think the attacking front scheme is one way to get, you know, some more pressure on the quarterback from the interior, because those guys, again, they aren't going to be anchoring when the ball is snapped. They're going to be getting upfield. Whether it's a run or a pass doesn't matter. They don't have to sit there and figure it out. They're just getting upfield regardless, right? That helps them think less and play faster. They've been working on get off so much this offseason, which means that their ability to get off that when the ball is snapped, get immediately into the backfield as fast as possible and take those offensive linemen by surprise is going to be better. And then there's the whole thing that Robert Saleh is going to do with simulated pressures, where, you know, he's going to show you four down linemen and a few linebackers, and, you know, he doesn't like to drop his D linemen into coverage, so there may not be as much simulated pressure as we saw with Denard Wilson, but there will be times where Cedric Gray comes screaming up the middle and, you know, somebody else is dropping into coverage, or the occasional blitz. He doesn't blitz a ton, but there will be the occasional blitz. So I think the Titans are not going to have much of an issue getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. I actually think the defense is going to be a pretty good defense. I mean, I've talked about this before too. Robert Saleh, when he got to New York, his first year in New York, the Jets were the worst defense in the NFL. And then from the next season on, they were a top 3 defense basically every year that he was there. One of the big reasons that Robert Saleh's defense was 32nd the year he got there is because he didn't have his guys yet. This time, Robert Saleh knows, I don't want to go through that season where I have the worst defense in the league because I don't have my guys. probably had a conversation with that about that with Mike Borgonzi and said, go get me some of my guys. And what'd they do? They go get a bunch of his guys. He's talking about it on NFL Network. I played that clip earlier. You know, the defensive guys that they got and then shoring up the back end with Flott and Alante Taylor, who, you know, they may not be locked down cornerback ones in this league, but they are guys that can certainly make plays, and especially if you have the defensive line in front of them that they will have. So I actually think the defensive line and the defense is going to be better than we think. It's going to be on the offense and Cam Ward to be more consistent down to down if this team wants to take that step. But again, if you have a good defense and a good offensive coordinator, you can win a lot more games maybe than people expect you to in the NFL. It's also a game of slim margins and luck, and the ball bounces weird ways and small sample size. And like, the Broncos won 14 games last year and they won like 10 one-score games. You know, those are coin flip situations where the ball can slip through a player's hands and the Broncos get a win, or like they connect on an impossible pass play that they might hit one out of five times, but they hit it when they needed to, and so they go win the game. And that's why you always talk about regression candidates every offseason, teams that won a lot of one-score games. That's not necessarily a skill, right? That's a stat that doesn't often stick from year to year. So can the Titans just be better in those situational areas and turn it into a skill and be good at winning one possession games? I think with this coaching staff, they could be. All right, guys, I think that is going to do it, unless there are any more good questions here in this chat. I do have a super chat to hit, so let's hit that.
We keeping a book right now.
From Walmart Man, Levis triggered my PTSD when I watched training camp the other day. The defender dropped a pick six that was meant for the check down to the running back. Yeah, Levis will do that to you. Appreciate the super chat, Walmart Man. Thanks for supporting the show. The Solo Graveyard Shift. Shout out to Nathan again for naming this show that. 200 jewels.
We keeping a book.
Here we'll hit. Here's an actual question from Kevin Hamner. Hamner, got it that time. The Giants D-line does make me nervous. Plus, they have Denard as DC, don't they? Yes, they do have Denard as DC. Their D-line is probably the strength of their roster. But you know who knows that D-line as well as anybody? Brian Daboll, who's the head coach of that team for almost four years. So I do think that the Titans will be ready to game plan around a ferocious D-line in week three when they play the Giants. Team scrimmage is tonight at Nissan Stadium. Parking lot opens at 4. Doors open at 5. Practice starts at 6:30 Central Time. Hope everybody that wants to get out there has a chance to. Hope it's a fun time, and hopefully Cam Ward lights it up so we have some fun stuff to talk about on Monday with Easton Freeze. Hershey for Eva. Graver, how do you feel about Hooker nickel snaps and James Williams going back to some safety snaps? I think there's a chance that they do something like that because James Williams dropped 20 pounds this offseason, former safety, one of their better coverage linebackers, been making plays all training camp. I do like Hooker in the back end too, though. And I don't know if I like Hooker as much as a nickel. Like, there are plays from last season even where Hooker is a nickel in coverage. I think, was it Hooker the nickel in coverage on JSN on his long touchdown that they scored against the Titans when the Seahawks came to town? I think he was. Like, Hooker's a decent player who can man up on some tight ends and cover them sometimes, but the offensive coordinators in today's NFL, the ones who put their best receivers in the slot just to get a matchup like this, you want to avoid that because you don't want Amani Hooker being the guy covering the Jamar Chases, the JSNs of the world, because that is a really tough matchup for him. But I think that you can put, I think Marcus Harris is going to be your nickel, and maybe James Williams plays as like a third safety in the box at times as a way to just to get him on the field because he is a guy that is making plays at training camp on a daily basis. A couple more super chats.
We keeping a book right now.
350 jewels from Evstro. Thank you very much. And a $2 super chat.
We keeping a book.
From Len Grant Attacks. Appreciate all the hard work and shows. Thank you very much for showing up and tuning in every day. Make sure you subscribe to the channel and like this stream. We got 162 people in the stream right now, which I think is like near our peak for this hour, 17 minute long program. That's a big number, and it makes me not want to end the stream because we got a lot of people here, but I have been going for a long time, and so I got to get out of here soon. I don't believe SBT highlights. I don't believe the Nissan practice will be streamed, but because it's an open practice to fans, that means the media can tweet a play-by-play update of what's happening. If there are no fans, like yesterday's practice was close to fans, the media has to wait till after practice to give out any practice reports. But tonight they will be tweeting him, tweeting stuff out as it happens. If I recall last year, we even got video from like team period stuff last year. Cause I remember when I made my Cam Ward, Calvin Ridley video last year using plays from the Nissan scrimmage of Calvin Ridley getting behind the defense. So scrimmage begins at 7:05. Thank you, Nathan Smith. Practice starts at 6:30, but I guess they got to warm up. They got to stretch. They got to do some individual stuff. I guess the actual scrimmage will begin at 7:05. How do I feel about Williams potentially playing Mike this year? Williams is not going to play Mike. No, I think that Cody Barton is probably going to start at Mike. And then earlier this week, we heard multiple coaches talking about how Anthony Hill Jr. is focused solely on the Mike spot. They want him to hone in on one position and master it before he learns other linebacker spots. So if anybody's not going to be, if Cody Barton's not going to be Mike, the next guy up is going to be probably Anthony Hill Jr. James Williams is going to get on the field probably as like a nickel and dime linebacker, but I don't think that he's going to be the Mike. Graver's inner thoughts. Where the is Gary? I get this is a multi-layered joke here. Is in reference to Cam Ward saying instead of cursing. Gary Soto is the patron saint of the Music City Audible podcast. I am not still going just because I want Gary to show up and drop a mega donation. We appreciate Gary very much for his support of the channel, but we don't live stream just for said financial support. No, I'm still going because there's still 168 of you here watching. Walmart man with another super chat.
We keeping a bulk right now.
Wild prediction. DK gets traded this year. No, that's wild. It's not going to happen. DK is a valuable special teams member. They're going to draw up some package plays for him on offense. Robert Saleh, in the interviews he did for NFL Network, multiple times was asked about, you know, the playmakers they've added around Cam Ward. And every time it was two different references that he listed off the top five receivers on this team and made sure to include DK in that group as one of the five guys that is going to be making plays for this offense and guys that they're excited about. Cause you know, he's asked about, oh, you add Wandale Robinson, you add Carnell Tate. How's it going to help your quarterback? And he immediately goes, oh, well, they're going to help a lot, but also the guys that we have here, the guys that were rookies last year and the growth that they're showing, and specifically mentions DK and Ian Manner. So I would be pretty darn stunned. I think Ridley has a chance to get traded if Ian Manner's shoulder injury isn't serious and, you know, they can get good snaps out of DK and they have to feel good enough about Bryce Oliver, honestly, as wide receiver five to make a move like that. But after the contract restructure this offseason, Calvin Ridley's contract becomes very tradable. So that would be the one that I'd have my eye on as possibly a guy that gets moved at some point during the year after he's done the veteran leadership thing for half a season. And then they're like, all right, we're ready for the youth movement here. Ridley, appreciate you. We're going to send you off to a contender, something like that. All right. It looks like I have run out of questions to answer. So I will once again thank you all for joining me for this Graveyard Shift episode. I really hope you enjoyed the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 clips that I played on this show today. And I hope you guys understand the amount of work that went into prepping that many clips for you and that you appreciate it, because I appreciate you. That's why I do it for you. Just hope that you guys also appreciate me. All right. Oh, PK. Oh, we got an IO update. Look at that. Good thing I kept the show going for as long as I did, because I have a tweet. Paul Koharski, Elik Ian Manner, parentheses, shoulder, is checked out. Or sorry, Elik Ian Manner, parentheses, shoulder, checked out and is good to go. Thank goodness, because I have him on like 8 best ball fantasy teams already, and I needed him to be okay. Yes, we can rejoice. And that's a great little button to end the show on, knowing that Elik Ian Manner is going to be okay. And I hope everyone is excited for Nissan Stadium practice tonight. I'll be back on Monday with Easton Freeze to recap tonight's practice. Hopefully it's not too old or stale by then. Hopefully it's like a really good show by then, because we won't be instantly reacting and trying to put our thoughts together. We'll have had like a whole weekend to figure it out. Thank you to those of you in the chat who wished my wife Jessica a happy birthday. Thanks all for joining. Remember, if you haven't liked the stream, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and stay after for a few seconds here. In about 15 seconds, I'm gonna ask you guys to leave a comment on the actual video. Appreciate you all. Until Monday, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.